Safety cannot be the sole driving force behind the decisions we in government are making. It cannot be the driving force behind what our governor is doing, what our Secretary of Health is doing. I've seen some calls from teachers unions and others saying, you know, we can't go send kids back to school until there are 2 weeks of zero cases. We've lost our collective minds if that's how we are going to choose to move forward in this society. We simply cannot continue going down this destructive path of trying to keep everyone safe, trying to keep everyone from getting any form of any sickness. What's next? We're going to quarantine children who get the stomach flu, quarantine someone who gets the common cold. When does this end? It is not the government's responsibility to keep people safe. It's not the government's responsibility to pass mandates, to pass orders, to try to keep us safe. It's time for us to take personal responsibilities for our families. Government cannot be expected, nor should they be expected, nor should they assume the role of trying to keep us all safe.
It is Friday, August 21st. 2020. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker and chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yep, and up top, with a last name like Cox, you get what you get. On today's show, yes, it's official. The ticket is Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Or if you're Tucker Carlson, Kamala Kubala. Yes, Fox News is going all pronunciation police. Well, the task now, though, is to get rid of the acute condition that is Trump so we can continue organizing to get rid of the chronic condition of market fundamentalism, white supremacy, and sexism. And if you need any proof, well, you should have just been watching the Republican-like convention this week. I mean, the Democratic Party convention this week. It has come and gone, but yes, it does look like the Lincoln Project's effort to convince establishment Democrats to lean to the right has had an impact. Yeah, I'm not sure the Republican convention will have as many Republicans as the Democrats did. There will be some lots of QAnon people there, though, I bet. Yeah, the DNC quietly dropped the demand to end fossil fuel subsidies from its platform this week. Yeah, they did that as, oh, I don't know, California is being overrun by climate change-induced wildfires for the second year in a row. Greenland's ice sheet is melting at unprecedented levels. And, yeah, Iowa farmers are just digging out after being ravaged by a devastating derecho storm, a hurricane in the heartland. It's insane. And, yeah, speaking of QAnon, QAnon candidates like Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia are winning. Let the insanity begin. We're bringing the conspiracy theories into the heart of the American public. Oh, and speaking of conspiracy theories, Steve Bannon got arrested on a big yacht for allegedly defrauding hundreds of thousands of donors through his We'll Build the Wall fundraising campaign. Bannon, along with three others, raised more than $25 million, and about $1 million of that went straight into Bannon's pockets for, you know, personal expenses. Perhaps the best part of this story is that he was arrested with the help of the U.S. Postal Service Inspection Police, or Inspection Service, sorry, which are like postal police, literally. Stamp that shit right on Bannon. That's what I'm saying. And not only is Trump trying to throw a wrench in the works of the U.S. Postal Service, but a recent review by David Sirota's newsletter, TMI, shows that Trump's political appointments to the United States Postal Service have been steering contracts to big-dollar Trump donors. You know, people like Wayne Hoovestall or something like this, who owns the anti-union Eagle Express Lines. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in contracts. Yeah, what you heard in today's intro, that was Jim Cox, you know. The name fits. What can I say? He is the head of the House Labor and Industry Committee. He, like the House Republicans, don't think the government's responsibility, don't think it's government's responsibility to take care of the citizens during a pandemic. Nope. You just go into the pandemic. I don't know. Crazy. And as some public schools, college, universities spit in the face of science to open up for face-to-face classes, we are already seeing spikes in coronavirus cases. North Carolina State does an about-face and sends students back home after a cluster of cases. That follows UNC's Chapel Hill's abrupt shift to all online classes after over 130 students tested positive during the first week. Notre Dame has more than 300 cases, but God will sort that out, with several members of the football team now testing positive. They've shifted to all online classes until at least September 2nd, but they're keeping everybody there just in case. Michigan State put the kibosh on its hybrid learning plans after seeing the outbreaks of universities across the country. At least Michigan State was like, "Rut-row, we better not do this," right? Go Spartans. And University of Connecticut evicted multiple students from dorms after they held a huge dorm party with no mask or social distancing. So far, UConn has placed 25 students in quarantine after they came in contact with several other students. I think it was several other students, seven or so, who tested positive for COVID-19. And those students are trying to get the hell out of campus, but they're not able to yet. Oh, we can just go on and on, case after case. The New York Times is trying to track and keep track of this stuff, but it looks like higher ed institutions are becoming COVID-19 hotspots. It's the spreaders, man. It's the spreaders. And Kutztown University faculty members don plague doctor masks to protest administration's reopening plans. The silent protest took place in front of KU President Kenneth Hawkinson's taxpayer-funded house as students began to move into their dorms. And as next week's start of classes draws near, the university administration has to dramatically work its quote-unquote plan, as reality has shown their original plans are just a bunch of happy talk and smoke and mirrors. Hey, but no worries. KU's provost sent out a one-sentence update yesterday saying simply, "Kindness can change somebody's day." See? Everything is fine. And we're going to talk a little bit about Syracuse and UConn turn to blaming students. And they washing their hands of any responsibility. That says Penn State.
They signed a non-disclosure agreement.
That's right. Well, that's right. Penn State tried to get students to sign no foul agreement, basically saying that they released the university of any liability for attending campus classes. There was such a pushback from parents and students that they had to revise that a little bit. But basically looking for ways to say, "Oh, look, Joe Paterno didn't know. I mean, we didn't know about COVID-19, right? It's like, do you not learn from freaking history, people? Apparently not, right? But then you also got KU's University Senate president. He basically, he's like, tell the faculty members, if you don't get back in them classes and make sure it's face-to-face, you're going to be selling out all the custodial staff and think it's going to be on your head. As opposed to more rational plans for protecting workers, like we see up these amazing students that are doing this work up at East Stroudsburg University in this great solidarity campaign. We'll talk a little about that. And today's last call, yeah, we'll see what's happened at Free Will. I got no space news. I did get, however, an upgrade on my computer. And basically, my upgrade is from a computer that was not working to a computer that is working. So that's it. That's a good thing. And so, Raging Chicken Studio looks got a little more spiffy now, which basically means that I, personally had to, buy the computer, whatever. We'll talk about that. Anyways. Wanted to check out the Coop Live this Monday night. If you missed last week, man, you missed a fantastic show on Monday. We had members from the Racial Justice Organizing Committee in Philadelphia on the show. Fantastic conversation. So check that out. That's in your regular podcast feed. But this Monday coming up, we're going to have student organizers from Kutztown University's Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, who were part of conducting that awesome action on Thursday with the Dr. Plague Doctor mask. And we're also going to have someone from East Stroudsburg University's Student Solidarity Committee, who are doing some amazing work with their solidarity campaign with campus food service workers. And if you haven't already, please check out The Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in the Dish Network DirecTV through Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you download Rick Smith's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbeans, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, I want to give a special shout out to returning member, Reed. Thank you, Reed, for coming. It's come on back aboard. Yes, Reed has become the latest member of Raging Chickens. You can become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress for as little as $5 a month. Because look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today by going to that site, patreon.com/rcpress, and choose your membership level. Starts at $5 a month, everybody. Now we're spanning our network and prepare the fight for as we're prepared for the fights of our future. And we're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member and help support Pull No Punches, progressive media grown right here in your backyard. For those $5 a month, go to patreon.com/rcpress today. And the other thing I'll give a little shout out to on our live show. Our live show kind of goes out, if you want to call in, it's a call-in show, basically, if you want to call in. And if you call in, you're going through the Podbean app, and it's kind of live there. You can listen to it from the Podbean site. But if you want to call in, you check it out from the app. And they have these little gifts that you can send out during the show, right? So they have these things called golden beans, right? So you buy, like, I don't know, like, you know, it's like any app, if you're going to kind of like buy the currency of the app, right? So they have these golden beans, you know, for as little as, I don't know, like $4 or something like that, or $2, or you can, you know, buy more of them, and you can send us little gifts like a cup of coffee or whatever like this, and that helps support the show too as well. So thank you for those folks who've been tuning into the live show and have been supporting us with those little gifts. It's been fantastic. I also want to give a huge shout out to all the guests that have been on the show so far. It's been something that I've been looking forward to each week now, and we got some potentially really cool guest lineup. We've got a guy, a lawyer, who's going to be who's involved with some of the anti-fracking work in kind of west central Pennsylvania, working on kind of like home rule charters and things like this. And so we should be talking to him in a couple of weeks. Ideally, we've got some folks, some organizers who are kind of trying to really keep us focused, keep our eyes on the prize when it comes to making sure that we are not going away after this election, and really thinking about some organizational strategies. So we're going to be widening out. I know we've had a lot of focus so far on kind of the back to school stuff, and that's been intentional because I know that's been on a lot of people's mind. It seemed like the right time to begin launching our live show for exactly that reason. So anyways, so Sean, man, I you know, I'm sorry about all the technical crap this morning. It was you
cut into my hours.
I know. You may for folks who are listening to this, I'm not sure how the sound is as I'm recording it. Not sure how it is with this new computer. Trying to get this set up, we were having some sound issues this morning. And for those folks who are looking for the show on YouTube this morning, it is not there. Not able quite to stream yet, simply because I'm trying to transfer files off my old computer, which sometimes turns on and sometimes does not, to this new one. So I'm probably just gonna have to rebuild our streaming from this computer. So we shall see. I also need some cable hookups to figure out this other monitor system. So I know I'm boring everybody here, so whatever. But so thanks for kind of sticking with us and putting up with this. And Sean, finally, it's been too long. We were off last week, but man, how the hell are you?
Pretty good. I completely skipped over the DNC convention this week.
You didn't. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was going to say you didn't miss much, but that depends. I mean, if you were having trouble sleeping this week, you know, you should have had that on. You would have been out in the light, like a light. It was like,
okay. So it amazes me how effective like the Lincoln Project strategy has been.
Yep.
With like winning over liberals, and now they're just like fucking openly talking about privatizing the post office on Twitter and trying to get that into the lexicon. And it's like, no, this is who these people are. And it's like, it amazes me that like we're 20 years right now, pretty much since 18 years since Iraq war started, and like the rehabilitation image project that is still going on for these people. Like the fact that like Steve Schmidt has a fucking job, like the guy who picked Sarah Palin and is looked at as like the voice of reason within the Republican Party.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing. Okay. The same thing goes with Bill Kristol, like Rick Wilson, John Kasich. Like
John Kasich, the freaking anti-union
fucking
like
scab.
Yep.
Like I know. I mean, it just amazes me. Like, the online base for the Republican for the Democratic Party is hashtag the resistance, and that's it.
Well, you know, if anything, it's made things pretty clear in my mind, right? Because, you know, first I have to say, I mean, I did watch kind of out of the kind of my side eye. I watched a bunch of the convention. Like, you know, it's one of the few times where my wife and I get to actually like hang out together while we're doing work, right? So you had that out in the kind of in the background and stuff. And my, you know, after the first night, I have to say, I was pretty worked up and pretty mad, right? And I was getting frustrated. And then as the week went on, I just kind of like slowly said, look, I don't know what I was expecting. This is exactly what I was expecting.
It's amazing. Like AOC gets like a 60-second time spot.
Well, and then catches hell for doing like a procedural, like a normal procedural move.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, oh my God, AOC, like anti-Biden. She tried to nominate Bernie. I'm like, Bernie had delegates. And as part of what happens in the convention, this is anybody who has kind of enough delegates to kind of like bring them to the convention. They can enter their name into nomination. We saw this every single time. We saw this in 2016. We saw this in 2012. Or, well, not 2012. It was only Barack Obama, but 2008. Like, this is just kind of what happens. And it's a procedural motion that basically comes up and say, enter their name into nomination so that those delegates can whatever be released eventually and say in support of Biden, whatever like this. But it's a way also of recognizing, right, candidates and actually building unity. That's the irony of the whole thing, right? Is that as a party, you enter that person's name in there to recognize and acknowledge the work that they've done, right, and the importance that they've get, and then that person kind of says, let's get behind the person who's got enough delegates, in this case, Joe Biden. So it was like, and it was this huge blow up. And by the way, and the huge blow up came from the same people that are, you know, these centrist Democrats who are just still freaking pissed off, right, that that Bernie stole everything from Hillary. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's like, it was sickening this week. So whatever. So
grudges be damned.
Well, yeah. And so you had, I mean, the amount, look, I have to say, if I have to give my kind of more reasoned review of the Democratic convention this week, I said, look, they did some things which I thought were done really well. Night one was not one of them, right? The first night was just bad, right, in terms of like who they trotted out there and put it in front and center. But I also told you, should tell every kind of like progressive lefty kind of out there, that the Democratic Party has absolutely no intention whatsoever, right, of you know, turning like to progressive. It's going to have to be taken from them. The power is going to have to be taken from them. And if anybody's been listening to Ben Dixon, right, the Benjamin Dixon show, right, Benjamin Dixon, I think, is right on the money, is like having to start really thinking seriously about what happens after this election. Absolutely 100% okay, so clear that Trump, wait, like 100% clear that Trump has got to go. But then you start to have to actually doing something.
Absolutely
with the progressive
no austerity
caucus.
Whatsoever. Like, well, austerity cuts are taken off the table.
Well, yeah, absolutely, right? You have to leverage, right? I mean, in other words, that caucus is going to have to leverage its power and basically saying, if you introduce these things, we are not with you as a caucus. And then eventually, if you are going to do this for 4 years, we are going to leave, right?
Like, do you think AOC and do you think that caucus is now large enough to where they can peel 15 or 20 votes?
It's getting away. I think they're real close.
Away from...
Yes.
I mean, like, that's pretty much all you need is like 20 votes to just say, no, we're not going to vote for something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, look, and you've got a midterm election coming up, right? So you're going to have this election, right, 2020. And then in 2022, you're going to have a midterm where you're going to actually, you know, progressives are not going away. They better not go away. I don't think they are. And then I think that's only going to add to the numbers, right? Especially if Biden does not deliver. Right. And I don't think that he's going to deliver. Right. I mean, I really think that, like, Joe Biden, if you saw his acceptance speech last night, I mean, the guy is like, you know, he's going to be a caretaker. Right. He's in there to kind of get rid of Trump. And as much as people wanted to get excited about Joe Biden, the vast majority of people that are kind of activated in politics right now who are under like 40, right, can see through this. Right. So whatever, his experience does not reflect it. And Nancy Pelosi's, you know, her coming out this week and kind of like, you know, turning away from what's his face, from Markey, right, and endorsing Kennedy in the primary, right? Basically saying, how dare you debase a Kennedy's name? I'm going to endorse Kennedy in the primary, right? The guy who basically was a co-author of the Green New Deal. I mean, come on.
Also, like that, okay, so that Ed Markey ad
was freaking great.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. It was fantastic.
It was amazing. And like, I understand that like Pelosi has to endorse Kennedy because like that's what House members do. Like they usually endorse their incumbent, but she also has the power to sit out and not fucking issue an endorsement. Like, you
that's
know what
I'm
I mean?
Saying.
Like, she could, a non-endorsement would have been better versus like, but yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get like all up in arms about the Pelosi endorsement because usually that's just procedural stuff. But like, I mean, just at this point, like fucking spike the ball on these people.
Like, but that's what I'm saying. Is like all that matters. Like it, like in the scheme of things, in terms, of, does it really matter about her endorsement? No, but it's a.
I love
add it to
the
number
the
of items that give you evidence about what the deal is.
Though that was some serious shade. Ask not what your country can do for you.
Well, it's about time. And he said like, and it's now we've asked that question. Ask not what the country can do for you, what you do for the country, what you can do for our country. But we are now at the time where we need to ask what our country can do for us. Right. I mean, boom. I mean, come on. That was great. That was great.
Yeah. But
so anyways, I mean, I think so. If you look at the, I have to say, now I want to be very clear about saying this. This is not, I'm not trying to kind of hype here. I'm not trying to say that I love this, but I am so glad that Biden chose Kamala Harris for the vice presidency slot.
I thought it was going to be Susan Rice.
Well, that was my concern, right? But I think that, look.
But I think like we've said it from the beginning, it always was going to be Biden Harris in the end. Like when that's kind of like what everyone was saying when once it started like last year. Like it would end up being Biden picking Harris, but.
Well, I'm sure that there were people that were, you know, all the Lincoln
like
Project people. Well, yeah, exactly. Right. All those people.
Too ambitious.
In his ear. Doing this stuff because look, I mean, Kamala Harris and her acceptance speech like the other night at the convention, I think was exceptional, right? And I think it was, this is what happens when you have a candidate who is not or is able to kind of like determine what she is saying and how she is saying it, not kind of try to jockey with a bunch of other candidates. And I think that because of like, I think she would have done much better in the primary, for example, if there weren't so many candidates and it was only had to rely on these sound bites. I think this is her strength as a candidate. And I am not saying that I agree with her policies. I'm
fucking
not
fucking sell out.
Well, exactly. I mean, but I'm saying purely at the
let's
level.
Get out of the system, let's get out of the way now.
Well, look, I mean, this is like, if you want to, win, if the whole goal is to get rid of Trump, right. Kamala Harris was the best choice among the people that he said he was going to choose.
And it's also like, okay. So I was like trolling some fellow lefties last week about things. Basically, like, you can't just have, like, take your ball and go home because it wasn't, like, Karen Bass or someone like that with this. Like, it was, like, I don't know. Like, the collective whine that was waiting to come out over this just...
No, I know. I agree. And I just, like, look, I expect it. But you know what? This is, if you want to get away from the politics of Twitter versus the politics of politics, right? I mean, you got to recognize that Kamala Harris... If Joe Biden is going to have,
I think it's a safe pick with a high reward.
Right. I mean, look, and there were other people that were saying
she's a lot better. I mean, like a lot better than like Tim Kaine.
Jesus Christ. Tell me about it.
I mentioned Tim Kaine to my mom. My mom was like, who's that?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why he was designed to be right. He's going to be wallpaper. Right. And look, I mean, look, the Democratic Party, there is no doubt about this is another signal by choosing Kamala Harris. Right. They signaled this is the direction of the party is right. Because that's essentially why she was chosen.
Yeah, no, that is where the party is going. Young women of color.
Yep.
like women, period. Like, no, like that's where the, like, that's where the party's going.
Yep. And I mean, this is representational politics. I get that, right? Yes, we're not, this is not at all talking about like a policy set at this point. If we have the policy set question is definitely moving left, right? But representational politics here becomes absolutely important, especially since you got an old white guy as the top of the ticket.
Yeah. And it's also like, I mean, representational politics, I mean, like, this is where every part of the left is going.
Yep.
Towards women and women of color, you know, seeing the union movements and stuff like that. It's no, I mean, like, it is where it is,
right?
Which is a good thing. I'm not going to say, like, you know what I mean?
No, I agree with you 100%. And then, frankly, this was always one of my concerns.
That's what these primaries have seen, like, throughout this whole entire year, too.
Yeah,
the party getting more representational, taking out older white people for people like, you know, Nikhil Saval or any of the progressives who won this year.
Yeah, like Jamal Bowman, for example, is freaking doing awesome stuff. Like, I mean, that guy is fucking rocks the house. So all that, right? So this is a convention, and I think that you know, like Sam Cedar,
really
the majority report.
Fuck about,
what's that?
I just don't give a fuck about the convention.
No, but you got. But look, I mean. There's a
I'm
difference
sorry,
when
that, that's where my politics is at right now. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, I understand
I am
that, right?
So over with like this, like, yeah.
But I think that the important, if we're just to actually as purely from the point of analysis, we'll be going to look at, say, okay, what comes out of that? And I think that the highlight of it for me was probably the Kamala Harris speech, right? Because I think that actually, that was the one thing that gave me a little hope that there's at least a tendency within that campaign that is paying attention to the base at the level of representation. So we shall see. But I think that will actually make a difference. That is the one substantive thing that make a difference. If you listen to Joe Biden's speech last night when he accepted a nomination, it's like just pull any freaking 1990s political speech and then that's what you got. Right? I mean,
copy it and paste it.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, look, the guy's good when it comes to, you know, whatever. I mean, if you want to go, like, talk about, like, how Joe Biden's a good guy, go read any freaking newspaper right now or watch cable news about that or listen to the kind of, like, you know, the vomitorium that is MSNBC right now. I had to, like, silence those.
So, like, one of the things I can't believe, like, the one of the things that's, like, on here that we didn't talk about but also related to a topic with the DNC – dropping their fossil fuel subsidies,
yes,
right, from the plank, but also like Majority Report brought this up, they fucked with the Medicaid eligibility age,
yes,
in the platform, and it's just like, you did this during a middle of a fucking pandemic,
yep,
like you made a worse position on healthcare,
yep,
during a pandemic,
yep,
like a shittier position than the one before, like. And again, it just shows you, like, for the most part, it shows you what the DNC is. Like, these conventions, yes, I would have loved to have gone this year, and I would have loved to have paid my way to it. Yeah. Like, just from, like, a purely political standpoint, there are a lot of activists, DSA members, union people who go to this thing. But it's, like, the people who are voting the delegates, like, this is who they are. Like, this is exactly, like, this is who they are on the state level as well.
Yep.
Like within our own parties, like this is state commit. This is like, these are the people who go to state committee and stuff like that. And it's just like, I mean, and it's not surprising. I mean, for them, it's just a social event. And if they wanted to get rid of every progressive platform, they have no problem doing it. And it just shows you like how to touch the whole entire system is. But I digress. Yep.
Yeah. But you know, this is it, you know, I just think that, you know, I spent even much more time on this than I even wanted to. I think really my main thing about the convention is, like, one is that this should be make crystal clear that our next big fight, right, is with the Democratic Party, right? And that we have to be, you know, instead of this kind of on off either or black white, you know, kind of ways like of pro-con kind of ways of thinking about this, either like the Democratic Party didn't do everything that I want, so I'm going to go home, right? That kind of garbage is nonsense. So is the nonsense that you see from the Green Parties, right? Where the Green Party basically sits there. Where do they go?
I love fucking the Green Party people. Like,
well, but I mean, like, where the hell? Look, where the hell are they for all that? Then all of a sudden, here, presidential politics, you know, presidential election comes up. Oh, suddenly there's a candidate. Right? No.
And then they get upset when their petitions get fucking challenged in courts.
Right.
Which is another thing. Another one of my friends is like, I know someone's like, this is just like two-party repression, blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey, you're playing the game. Like, I'm sorry, but like, you have to get X amount of ballots, X amount of signatures to get on the ballot. And part of that game is making sure you have the required amount of signatures to get on the ballot. If you don't, well, good luck playing in 4 years.
Right. And I think that, you know, I want to be clear. This is not to say that, you know, to knock the platform of the Green Party, right? But it's a sense of like, that's not the way you build power. Yeah. Well, it's whining politics. That's what it is. It's politics based upon complaint and whining and judgment, right? As opposed to actually like building for political power. Right. And I think Breonna Joy Gray was on Michael Moore's show, right? His podcast this week. And she's really, really smart about this. And she's now working she's an editor or assistant editor or something like this for Current Affairs. She's got some great pieces out there that are really thinking about strategy. So I would strongly recommend taking a look at Breonna Joy Gray's stuff over at Current Affairs. And really kind of looking at people like, you know, look, Jonathan Smucker, for example. I have been so like thrilled by his Twitter account this week, last couple weeks actually, because he's got his eyes like clearly on the prize in terms of building power.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, Joe Biden, everyone at the DNC showed you told us what they were going to be, told us who they actually are this past week. That's why I didn't bother watching it. And it's like, if we're going to change the party, we have to build power within the party to change it. And it's like, you know, we don't change it. Like, people start, like, thinking that the party magically changes by just running congressional candidates, and that's where I think we get, as a movement, too caught up in running congressional candidates, primarying bad, which should still happen, but like a lot of that attention has to go on electing state Democrats first.
Right. Right.
And your school board. But like also, I mean, like filtering people up through your city councils in places like Philadelphia and in the state legislature. You know, instead of just trying to like put all of our hopes into like congressional victories.
Absolutely.
Which I mean are good when they happen and they should happen. But like absolutely. That's where we're going to see a lot of the party starting to change, you know.
Well, I agree. And I think that
this is where we're seeing it happen right now.
Right. And that's, I have to say, this is the way I want to kind of like close out part of this is like, that was the, that is the place that left me hopeful. Right. Is that it, watching the Democratic Party convention, it was so clear to me of how wide the gap is between the establishment of the Democratic Party and, for example, the movements, say Black Lives Matter movements, right? As much as they gave them lip service at the convention, where the movements are, where Gen Z is, where the millennial movements are, where the kind of energy is, right, in this country right now, is not where that establishment is. And I do think that organizing will continue and that I do think we are in to be in better shape because of it. So that's a good thing. So anyways, there's that. It did really bother me to see, you know, you've already talked about this a little bit, but the fossil fuel subsidies being pulled out after the climate news this week has been absolutely horrific. I was listening to stuff about the Greenland ice sheet, for example, which is like melting at kind of double the rate.
And two hurricanes are going to hit the Gulf of Mexico this week.
It's insane. I don't remember if I've ever seen anything like that before. I mean, I don't
like,
want
to. I remember like last week I put it up on Twitter, that fucking storm that formed like that right off the coast of New Jersey. Like yep. It was 185 miles southeast of New Jersey. And I'm just like, has anything ever like formed that high up in latitude wise? Like
was
out of nowhere?
Yep.
I mean, that you're talking about like you're forming off the coast of Maryland at that point, which is like pretty high up there for a tropical storm to be forming out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
It just shows you how warm the water is.
Right. And also, and what's happening, they're disrupting the different flows out there. Because one of the things they were saying about the melting of the Greenland ice sheet, they said basically this past year alone, right, they say that the melting of the Greenland ice sheet was responsible for about a half inch rise in the sea levels. That's insane. That's insane. I mean, yes, it's a half inch, but you think about how big the oceans are, right?
It's a volume. It's a lot of volume.
That is a ton. I mean, I meant to write this number down because I was like, I need to, I will forget it. But it was like millions of tons of water that are being lost every day is insane. And even what used to happen is that when Greenland used to kind of go these particular cold spells, we used to make up, and the glaciers used to build back up. But past couple of years, it was extraordinarily cold in Greenland, right? Kind of like more cold than usual, but that did not stop the melting. Right. So it didn't add back to the glacier like you would hope. So, we're kind of in for a fight. So there's that. I was really, I don't know, kind of morbidly thrilled to see the QAnon victories.
Yeah, I'm putting a tweet up about right now about this. Like, so when will the Lincoln Project go after the QAnon conspiracy theorists? They birthed from their lifetime's work in the GOP. I mean, seriously, like, this is
That's
like
true.
This is like, I mean, so I don't know where to begin with this. Like, it's
look.
I mean, this is a movement within the Republican Party. Like, this is the Republican Party taking the goalposts and going further to the right. Like, and this is why we should just clear them off from reality. Like, you know, last week, we have an anti-masker. We have a really big QAnon conspiracy theorist out here in central Pennsylvania who's not getting a lot of attention, Doug Mastriano. If you know who he is, know about him. Like, he's definitely a fucking nutter. But, like, Governor Wolf called him an extremist over his anti-mask position. And like Misek gave him a platform by pretty much like calling out the governor. I'm not the extremist. You're the extremist for making us wear these masks. And this is where like, no, you're legitimizing these people. Like there's a movement of conspiracy theorists getting elected into the Republican Party. Like it is your responsibility not to give them this platform.
That's right.
And you know, like this is what happens. Like they're normalizing these people. They're we're so fucked.
Yep.
And these are like Republican seats like that are safe Republican seats too. Yep.
Well, just to give you a sense of like who, like for example, so you take this one woman, what's her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? She just won, this is in Georgia. Right. And she just won the nomination there, Republican, primary with 57% of the vote. Right. So you can't even say it's like, there was like seven candidates and she got, no. This is like a landslide victory for a QAnon supporter. Right. She is the, and of course, Trump says like, hey, this is great. And he called her, a rising future Republican star. It was great. But to give you a sense, this is coming back from 2017, right? She had the video out there when she was talking directly about QAnon, right? And if you don't know QAnon, just go Wikipedia, right, to see what it is. I'm not going to bother. here you go. This is the only thing I'll say. This is from an NPR report on her. It says like she wrote she was in a video in 2017, which she said Q is a patriot. We know that for sure, right? And then she said, quote, there's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take this global cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles out, and I think we have the president to do it, talking about Trump. That's just a little tiny flavor of who just won that. And she is not alone, right? She is not alone in kind of these victories. As you see, QAnon kind of making appearances in other kind of primaries and other primary victories, and some of them they're in highly Democratic districts. But this is a person who is actually going to be probably headed to Congress. So there you go. QAnon going to Congress. Got to love that. So I mean, whatever, man. I was thrilled this week to see Steve Bannon was arrested. That was kind of fun, right? I have a fascination with that guy, and I think it was even better that he was arrested by the Postal Service. Did you see that, Sean? I thought that was awesome.
No.
You didn't see Bannon getting arrested?
Oh yeah, I did. I saw that. I'm sorry.
He got arrested by like the Postal Service police, basically, which is like such sweet justice right now. Yeah, it's great. I loved it. I love that. So yeah, we got that. So I mean, I don't know. There's so much going on, and I'm sorry. I have to say this too. I know I'm a bit more scattered than usual. My semester starts next week, and it's going to be a kind of who knows what's going on. So I'm a little bit all over the place, especially with our kind of tech issues here. So I apologize for that. Well, anything else kind of on top of the show, Sean, before we move on, take a break?
No, nothing really too much going on.
All right, cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break and let's see. I'm going to check my levels once again here, and we'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll talk to you right after the break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that workers' rights and women's rights activist and anarchist Emma Goldman gave a speech in New York City. Emma Goldman was born in what is today Lithuania. She came to New York in 1885, where she built a reputation as a powerful speaker. In New York, she addressed a crowd of between 3,000 and 4,000 unemployed workers in Union Square. The country was at the beginning of a depression that would sweep across the nation. Working families were finding it harder and harder to put food on the table. By the end of 1893, unemployment would soar to nearly 20%. Undercover agents at the rally reported that Emma had urged the crowd to take bread from the capitalists, quote, by force. Goldman recounted saying, quote, "Well then, demonstrate before the palaces of the rich. Demand work. If they do not give you work, demand bread. If they deny you both, take bread." 10 days later, Emma was arrested in Philadelphia for her comments at the New York rally. She was sentenced to 1 year in prison. After she was released, Emma traveled to Vienna to study medicine. She returned to the United States to continue her lectures on workers and women's rights. She spoke out about the need for women to have access to contraception, an opinion that could arouse a backlash at the time. Emma was arrested multiple times for daring to speak out on controversial issues. In 1919, during the height of the Red Scare anti-communist hysteria, Emma Goldman was deported to the Soviet Union. Emma was a courageous defender of free speech, often called the most dangerous woman in America. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Back here once again with Sean Kitchen for my scattered return to Friday's show. Here we go once again. So, Sean, we got some sound from right at the top here that you had sent me kind of earlier on here, kind of like put it on my radar, of this guy, you know, Jim Cox, the head of the House Labor and Industry Committee. Kind of walk us through what happened. I mean, my understanding is that little clip that we played was just a small part of his like rant.
Yeah. So he went on a 10-minute uninterrupted closing statement rant. That was part of his closing statement from like a 3-hour unemployment compensation hearing last week. And pretty much he made the argument saying that, you know, it's not government's responsibility to take care of their citizens. Like, and he said, like, it's not, and he said, you know, it's maddening that like we're mandating people to wear masks and stuff like that. And it shouldn't be, it's your own personal responsibility to keep yourself healthy versus like, you know, not like
the nanny state. You don't want the nanny state.
Yeah. The nanny state. And pretty much like one of the things he said, like in there is like, we're going to quarantine children. And it's like, yeah, like that's what happens when your fucking kid's sick at school. You fucking quarantine them for a few days. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, There's so many like points to that. People are like, well, obviously he doesn't take care of his kids. Like his wife does all that, because if he would pick up the kid from daycare one day, you know, like it's sick. You quarantine him. You keep him home from school.
That'd be something.
Yeah.
That would be useful.
But it's amazing. But pretty much like what Jim Cox says, but like the Republicans didn't want to say this whole entire time. In as clear as a concise way, like, you know, it sums up like what the House Republicans have been doing this whole entire pandemic, putting donors and business owners ahead of, you know, working people. And, you know, I think like it's, you know, pretty much what we're dealing with schools.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like what is different? Is there anything different between what he said and the actions of like Hawkinson or like these other university presidents?
No, just about scale. Right. So instead of making it like a particular school or a particular university becoming a hotspot, you're like, let's just make the whole freaking state. Right. Let's make the whole state a swamp of virus. How's that?
Yeah. I mean, like it's,
and
it's continuing like COVID denialism. It's just like, it is astonishing. Like they like don't believe in science whatsoever.
No, and it's like, you know, and I
there's a disconnect between these people as well and their base and their voters. Like there are Republicans who live in Mastriano's district. Like Mastriano called out the churches a couple weeks ago, you know, for canceling session, and even like their conservative pastors are like, no, we want to protect our parishioners. And this is what Jesus would want us to do, because he's about protecting his community and not about protecting himself or his own self-interest.
Look, churches are not about taking care of their parishioners, Sean.
Yeah.
They should be responsible for themselves. We don't want any nanny state in the church. Nanny church. Right? I'd be like, I don't know. Like, the logic of this stuff is so insane, right? Because I am so beside like myself in some ways with this kind of logic, that the depth of like the me-ism, and it only cares about my kind of like, I want stuff.
And it's all people like took personal responsibility and wore their fucking masks, we wouldn't be in this situation right now.
Well, there's another side of this too, is like, this is what freedom is reduced to. Right? Is that we don't have freedom from want. We don't have freedom from like unjust like deaths of like police shooting African Americans in the street.
Or like, right? You know, trying to destroy the mail system so we don't have a fair election.
Look, I remember it was one, you know, this goes back. I remember reading about this in college first, but it always kind of comes back. I remember some of the discussions like with the, you know, Federalist and Anti-Federalist kind of discussions. One of the things that Jefferson, and again, I'm not trying to kind of like say Jefferson was this all good, mighty thing, but one of those arguments that kind of emerged early on in terms of like what, you know, how this country is going to be set up and all this other kind of stuff. When Jefferson and some of those folks, they were basically saying, look, we have to limit the power of corporations as well as the government, because we don't want to just substitute one oppressor for another, right? And the recognition that the concentration of power in the hands of a corporation or a freaking billionaire, right, that actually inhibits our freedom and our liberty. Right. And so the idea that to be a free society, right, to be a democratic free society, is that no one should have the ability to control us. Right. That's the whole promise of democracy, is that we get to hold people accountable. It's ruled by the people, not by the freaking corporations. And instead of that idea about freedom, because this is why you have things like single payer healthcare. Why? Because people don't want to freaking die because they can't get access to a doctor. Right? And it doesn't matter if the health insurance industry says like, oh, this is not, no, sorry, too bad. That's what we want. The price of being part of this society is that this is what we want. and you don't get to tell us the terms. Right? It's the same kind of stuff. Is that you have police. Police are there to keep us safe, quote unquote, supposedly. But if police are killing people unjustly, guess what? No, we defund them. We take their power away because that's what a democracy is about. And instead, these freaking nut jobs, these right-wing Republican nut jobs, what they do is they subsidize about an understanding of freedom and liberty that is about kind of like the most base and banal and idiotic like fetishization of consumer choice. That's it. I want a burger now. That's freedom. Never mind if that burger is pumped through with all sorts of toxic garbage, right? That is they're going to kill us and that we can't get help in the medical system. Why? Because we don't have medical care. Right? I mean, it's like...
We're also like this, like the another like issue they're taking up is the cancellation of fall sports as an infringement upon their freedoms. And it's like, it's amazing. Like, I mean, yeah, like they have no alternative. That's the thing. And like, they're just using ad hominem, like talking points to fight back because they don't have anything else.
It's this fake parade of wine, right? It's this parade of like, I heard some of this stuff that they have there, they trot out these kind of like high school athletes and things like this, right? And college athletes for that matter. Like, I worked my whole life for this and blah, blah, blah. You know what? I'm sorry.
Also yesterday, here
this is this is the opportunity where you say to people, you don't freaking suck it up. We're at a historic pandemic. Right. As my wife has always says, like our grandkids are going to be reading about this period in time as one of the great pandemics. And then they're going to be reading about the absolute disaster that this country caused by its lack of action. Right. And, you know, we need to we get our heads around that. This is a historic,
you need
to just suck it up. Wear your freaking mask, like, and put a temper on your consumer desires.
I think at this point, I mean, like, we're going to be knocked down more than a few pegs.
Yeah. Economically. Not going to be. Like, it's already happening.
Oh, no. I mean, we've hit the point where China is going to surpass us as the economic superpower. And I really feel like they got lucky with this at the right place, right time. And like, you know, having Trump in office, like, gee, no wonder why fucking people want Trump in office still. If you're a foreign power, because like a failed state, and just like the United States, the longer we act as a failed state, the more power they gain.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, you know, this is the thing that's been just sticking. It's just been sticking me. It's been so frustrating. And it's like in my darker moments, this is the kind of stuff that just I just can't believe. And I see this happening on my campus. I see this happening kind of in my community. When the way that our discourse about freedom and liberty and justice has become so empty. And, you know, I have to say, you know, I keep on shouting out Benjamin Dixon, but I mean, Benjamin Dixon, I think, is on the right track right now. And if you're not listening to his show, you really need to listen to his show. And it's one of the things that Benjamin Dixon talks about is that we substitute in this country an abstract sense of freedom for a real sense of freedom,
and also
for a material sense of freedom.
I think what's amazing about this whole entire episode is like you have white people complaining about being forced to wear a mask.
Yeah,
and then you have black and brown people getting brutally suppressed by white people not wearing masks, i.e. the cops for the past like how many months.
Yep.
Like over this whole entire like, but we're talking about freedoms as in like the freedom of like, you're making me put this thing on my face and not causing an existential crisis in the meantime. Like your freedom because you don't want to participate in society. Like that, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like these people just don't have any willing to participate in society.
Yep. So I've been debating whether or not to talk about this, and I'm going to, I think. So
talk
first,
about what, the schools?
I don't know how much I need to say about the general stuff. I mean, there's been really good coverage of what's happening at, say, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
What happened in North Carolina was actually a cover-up until the student paper put out, like, this is a clusterfuck, and you people aren't, like, talking about it. Like, I heard that, like, staff at UNC didn't know what was happening until that op-ed got published.
Yep. And it blew the lid off of it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, I mean, like, my mom is now not going back to work because of, like, you know, what the fuck happened at all these schools over the past 2 weeks.
Yep.
But go ahead. I think you should carry on.
So I'm just trying to think about a manageable way through this. So let me say this, okay, as a way to begin this. One, I think, if you haven't seen the pictures, do click on the the link about the Kutztown University faculty and student members. They were, you know, with plague doctor masks on in front of the university's President Kenneth Hawkinson's house yesterday.
Which was an awesome action.
It was freaking awesome.
I mean, the photos that came out of, especially from the Reading Eagle.
Yep.
You could tell they had a professional photographer there, yep. Or the Allentown Morning Call had a professional.
Right, you know, and let me give credit where credit is due. I give credit to Dan Spiegel, who's a union member at Kutztown University, who did some awesome work reaching out to media. He's been our PR guy during the strike, and he's did bang up work there. Huge kudos to kind of Ann and Lemon and kind of student organizers who basically put that action together and kind of like had the did the signage for it and all this kind of stuff. I was not there for it. I was on kid duty. So this was 100% kind of organized by a kind of fantastic group of faculty that who just did an amazing job and had a great sense of how that would look. And it was powerful, right? So that's the kind of stuff that needs to just be normal. And I have to say, there were some of the behind the scenes conversations, right? There was a lot of faculty members who were like skittish about doing it during a time when there might be tours, because you didn't want to have a bad image. I'm like, I don't know what the purpose of something like that is if you're trying to hide it, right? And the whole idea was to kind of engage people over what the hell is actually going on. But look, people are afraid because Kutztown University is one of the universities who's got retrenchment letters, right? That they're worried about jobs and things like this. But, you know, again, I'm just of the mind that keeping your head down and being quiet does not save you. I mean, I don't know how many times we need to learn this lesson, right? And what has been really, really hard for me to deal with has been the lack, or I'm sorry, I don't want to say the lack, the tameness, right, of our own faculty union, the tameness of people when it comes to really needing to stand up and fight back. And to give you an example, there's a petition that's out there. It's being signed by faculty members, we've talked about this on the show, be signed by faculty members, by parents, by staff members, and it's got like, last time I looked, there was like, 1,700 or something like that. There's 1,600 signatures on it, right? It's a fantastic event. And our local union would not support it, right? And that's remarkable. You're talking about a petition that is calling upon the university to do the right thing when it comes to safety. And because it says that if they do not do this, it will become the basis of a vote of no confidence against the president, the local union would not support it because it was too drastic. They wanted to keep up, I don't know, good relations with the administration. It baffles me.
Gotta support those bosses along the way.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And look, I want to say, I actually
make sure the bosses have their rights.
Personally, the people who are in leadership positions right now of our union, personally, I like them as people, but that's not the point, right? I think people mistake right, their comfort in social situations with political action and the need to act. And so that's number one. I should also, we talked about this in the show a while back. My friend Mike, right, and a group of the faculty, Tabitha, who's on the live show a couple of weeks ago, and a group of faculty members were on a kind of a study team earlier on in the summer where they basically started researching what's the likely impact of the coronavirus and return to campus, right? Return to campus and like the spread of this. What will need to be in place in order for the campus to be safe, right? And this, I remember, this is back in June where they put together this report. Didn't take them that long. They just did some bang up work, put together and, you know, presented it even to the university and made it public and circulated it to other faculty members and showed what this would be. And it said, based upon the university administration's refusal to act, the only way that we're going to be able to kind of keep things safe is if we go all online in the fall. Is it, yes, it's going to be a hit in the short run, but over the long term, this is the only thing that is going to save things, right? And it, even at the level of, if you look at the number of desks in a classroom and the social distancing requirements, there was no way that you were going to be able to have anything that would be feasible, right, for students in the classroom. Without the willingness to hire more custodial staff, without the willingness to do temperature checks at every building, right? There's a whole stream of things. It was not going to be feasible, right? What we see happening nationwide with these kind of like abrupt turnabouts where students move into campus and then like 3 days later, students leave campus, right? I mean, that's happening at Kutztown right now, right? Students are moving
in. I don't know. Like, I mean, the stuff that like the people, the reopening process at some of these schools around the state have just been like fucking horrendous. Like Penn State, for instance, that non-disclosure waiver, like that waiver they formed, like that. Are you kidding me? Like who thought like that was going not going to cause a fucking like stir?
But what like, that says, these, well, no, look, they're arrogant. You cover up sexual abuse on your campus for decades. And you think that you can just hide it away and pay people off?
Sexual abuse stuff aside, like putting that like any other institution that attempts that, I mean, like I know some of the people I know who these people hire, like consultants and stuff like that, because they fucking work in Harrisburg and all. And it amazes me that like this is just like someone would think of that. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but this is my point. My point is that they, this is hubris, right? I mean, this is, they think that they are so powerful that they can just do this stuff, right? And what it tells you is if you're asking students to sign this agreement to kind of waive them for liability, that you know that they're getting COVID. You know that people are going to the hospital. You know that people are going to die. And that's why you're asking them to do that. But you think because Penn State is such the freaking like,
you're gonna wave this fucking form in the air.
It's the church. It's the church of the state of Pennsylvania is Penn State. Because of that, you think that people are going to look the other way and you're going to get away with it. Well, thank God they didn't. Because people are like, are you freaking kidding me? What? No. So, look.
I mean, what happened at Penn State, you know, even at LaSalle University, they were going to move fucking people in this week, and my mom's work got canceled for the year. They're like, yep, we're going all online. I'm just like, and my mom's happy. I mean, I'm happy she's not going to work because, you know, she doesn't get fucking COVID from this stuff. But it's like, are you kidding me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like you.
Right.
And also, like, the lack of leadership from the 14, from, like, the state system on this is just fucking astounding.
Oh,
like,
it's not, but I would argue that it's not a lack of leadership. This is the best way to facilitate the destruction of the state system of higher education as we know it, is you let it be a shit show, right? Instead of doing a responsible thing and coming up with a plan that is actually going to keep people safe and is going to actually kind of transition into a way that's going to, you know, get us past this, No, you just let them, you let the freakers do whatever the hell they want. And Kutztown University, Shippensburg University, Cheney University, and missing one. They're going to be, it's a laboratory. But let me make this point. So this is the bigger issue here, is that there's been, you mentioned, say, your mom, right? So a lot of what's happening on different campuses, right? Obviously, if the campus is shut down, right, online learning can happen, right? But what happens to the custodial staff? What happens to the food service workers? What happens to the groundskeepers, right? What happens to the clerical staff, right? What happens to all these folks, right? In a society that assigns accountability and responsibility to where it belongs, right, we would see ourselves as part of the same endeavor.
Like, my mom going back to work should never have been a question. Like, anyone going back to work should never have been a question. As a society, we should have just been printing checks, giving people money.
This is my point.
Yeah.
Like, and at the very, look, and it, what it, look, and we would have stood.
And it's like trying to explain this to my mom, like, mm-hmm. and she's not getting it. It's like, no. Like, they only care about one group of people, and those are the business owners. They don't care about you.
Right. And I don't know.
They see you as expendable labor.
That's right.
You can care less if you die.
Right.
And I think it, like, took me to tell her that, like, bluntly, like, they don't care if you live or die.
That's right.
Like, but look, and it's showing that.
But let's be honest, right? Let's be, and this is why, because is that, like, people in those jobs need those jobs, right? It's like people who are, you know, our custodial workers, our food service workers, who are groundskeepers, they need those jobs, right? And if they're just basically furloughed and sent home, right, then they're screwed, especially if you have a Congress that is unwilling to kind of extend unemployment benefits or actually provide the support that we need, right? So what happens? It gets pressured down. So instead of blaming and putting, like, the accountants on one, our state government, on our administrations who have made decisions to basically let these people hang out to dry, or just kind of like whatever, is that instead of putting those responsibilities there, you start to turn on each other. I want to illustrate this point. I'm not going to name this person outright, but it's a person who's the head of our university senate. All right. Sent out an email to faculty and senate. And this is what this says. All right. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a long email, but I'm going to read the first couple paragraphs. And then I want to kind of unpack it a little bit. And then I want to talk about what they did at Syracuse, because it's another tendency that we all, that this is why we have to be more militant. All right. So here it is. Please accept my apologies in advance for my candidness. I am writing to ask that you do everything you can to keep campus open in the fall. This is a faculty member. Not only do many Ask Me and Scoopa employees depend on campus being open, but I believe that a significant number of faculty positions would be eliminated, retrenched, if we have to suspend face-to-face operations. Undoubtedly, SARS-CoV-2 has led to the biggest public health crisis the U.S. has seen in a century. The risks of resuming face-to-face operations amid the pandemic are non-trivial and real, but so too are the financial implications of closing the university and moving 100% of classes online. We know that closing in the spring cost upwards of $8 million in refunded student housings and fees. And I've been told that closing the campus for the fall would be $19 million in lost revenue. The immediate effects of a campus closure are felt by staff members, felt most by staff members. Recently, I asked both Ask Me and Scoopa chapter presidents to provide union updates for the September Senate meeting. Both replied with statements about the negative impact the spring closure had on the respective bargaining units. Ask Me President Ray Dunkel further noted AFSCME's concerns that if KU goes 100% online in the fall, their members will be the first ones furloughed. He asked that we remember that they have a stake in what goes on in the university, and they often feel forgotten when it comes to these critical decisions. Additionally, I believe it's important to remember that the impact on our decisions have on our community partners, such as the employees who work for Aramark and the businesses in Kutztown and the surrounding areas that cater to and depend on student patronage. Based on these concerns and our role as representatives of the entire campus, Senate Exec has supported the decision to reopen campus. Okay. I'm not going to read the rest of this stuff.
Okay. So there's a couple of things I like want to go off here.
Go.
So you want to reopen for the community and the businesses that have been negatively affected by this. So like what happens like if you reopen for the community and the fucking business owners die because you wanted to reopen your campus and then they're not there anymore.
Hey man, you got to have like, grit and fortitude, Sean. Didn't you listen to President Hawkinson? Grit and fortitude, man. You got to suck it up, man. Suck it up and take on that virus, man. Get your big pants on.
It amazes me, like this type of like this logic of thinking.
It's incredible to me.
Are they like a union member with the faculty or like what
yep.
are the, yeah.
But this is not a union organization. The University Senate is not a union. University Senate is representatives of faculty, staff, and administration, right? The president of the Senate is a faculty member. And that's where this letter came from. And they voted in favor of reopening. So here's the thing. So what we're seeing...
I guarantee you they don't have classes. They're not teaching in person this year.
Well, you know, look, somebody's got to though, Sean. Somebody has to. Because
I'm going to vote to reopen, but I'll be the first person to apply to like teach
from anywhere else. I want you to sacrifice yourself, right? I want you to do that because our only options, and look here, this is what I mean about how absolutely effed up of society we are right at this point, is that because there is no social net, because there is no political will to push our governor and our federal government to take care of people, what we see here is representatives supposedly of faculty, supposedly of the community,
of
basically
labor.
Saying is that like we are going to have to sacrifice ourselves in order to help out. That's the limit of what we're able to do. I hear this, right? And this is why we're having this, got a student organizer from ESU, right? This is a freaking student organizer who gets it. Right, a student organization who gets it, that you build a solidarity campaign with other workers on campus and demand that those workers are taken care of. Kutztown University, the food service workers at Kutztown University are the only set of workers on campus who do not get paid sick leave in a pandemic. Okay?
And it amazes me, like, the point of this letter is, like, we are in debt. We have debt obligations we have to take care of, and opening up will help us reduce those debt obligations instead of having them mount further and further with because students aren't coming and we can't make payments on the fucking dorm buildings that we built or pay the private contractors to come in and take care of them and fulfill those contracts.
Yes, this is a soft peddling of the worst of right-wing neoliberal market fundamentalism that I'm seeing. Is a soft peddling. It's the freaking corporate democratic version of that garbage. It pretends that we care about people. It pretends that we're in this together, right? But you know what? The same people who are saying this kind of garbage now are the same ones that when we were raising, right? And I say we, me being one of them, and activists in our union and activists on our campuses and student activists who were talking about the assault on public higher education for years. These are the same people that dismiss us as freaking, we're too crazy, right? We're going to extremes. But this is the result of this. And these are the same people that are responsible for where we are right now. And the fact that we're going to basically divide and conquer and basically saying, you faculty members, if you're not going to get your asses into the classroom, right, and do face-to-face thing, knowing full well it's going to put students, faculty, staff, and community members at work. If you don't do that, then you are the cause of selling out your brothers and sisters in the labor movement. Fuck you. He's like, I cannot even believe this, right? I cannot believe that do this. And I am not going to be making friends by this. I'll tell you this right now, and I don't care. I do not care because I am so far beyond my ability to hold on to this kind of garbage discourse to cover over where the problems really lie. I'm sorry. This is the kind of letter that has sent us all into the pit of despair and will eventually send us right to the hospital beds. This kind of nonsense. And these are the same people who don't want to organize and push back. We're too militant to basically make demands upon our government, our statewide government, our local government, our administration.
These are the ones who,
when they look at a vote of no confidence, they say, oh, we can't do that because we might jeopardize our relationship with the administration. Fuck you. Because I am so far beyond this. I am so far beyond this. And I just want to mention this, but I don't want to get into this to take us off this track. But this the flip side of that is what we see happening at Syracuse University and what we happen at the University of Connecticut, right? Is there, it's like, who's responsible for the problems there? Who's responsible? Who is going to be our downfall? Who do we blame? In those cases, you blame students. It's because students couldn't just follow the rules and they couldn't be responsible. So therefore, we've got a coronavirus. No! The administration is the one that forced people back to face-to-face campuses, face-to-face classes. They're the ones who are responsible, not those freaking students. What the hell did you expect to happen? I mean, come on.
You have a bunch of people who haven't seen each other in like 7 or 8 months get all back in the same...
This is the most ridiculous. This is the most. I mean, this is the kind of stuff, Sean, that makes my head want to freaking explode.
You know what the funny thing about this? I mean, not the funny thing, but like anyone who has ever lived on campus and has gotten norovirus, you know, had to literally shit their brains out for a week. You know, usually when one person gets a fucking norovirus in your wing of the dorm, everyone gets a norovirus in your wing of the dorm. Like everyone in your dorm gets sick. It's how the dorms fucking are. And you're going to tell me like, yeah, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like
you have to live in, this is what I mean. This weird kind of freaking abstraction that people get into. It's like somehow it's going to be about personal responsibility of these students. You got to be kidding me. I was in Wegmans. I posted a picture on Facebook the other day because I'm sitting there in Wegmans.
Child without a mask.
Yeah, it's like this couple, like in their 30s, young 30s, sitting there walking around Wegmans, no mask at the meat counter. Right? So I freaking take a picture of them and post to Facebook, right? I mean, they're not students at the university, right? The point is that in a pandemic, you got to know that not everybody's going to follow the rules. Right? I mean, as much as you want that to happen, what good does it do to be able to sit there and say, oh, look at those people. They're bad. They didn't take personal responsibility. Who the hell cares? Because if you have one person who doesn't take responsibility and you put them into a kind of collective living environment, guess what? Everybody else gets it. And you can blame that student or blame that individual who didn't follow the rules as much as you want, but the only reason why that they were in a position to infect everybody else is because you put them in the freaking dorms. So you gotta stop this nonsense. I mean, I don't even know what it's going to take for people to get their head around that. And look, I understand that people are worried about their freaking jobs. I understand that. But the thing is like to say that, what is it going to take for you people, everyone, to get to the point where you see that sticking your head in the sand and trying to make nice with your oppressors is not going to solve the problem? You got to stand up your freaking selves and say, no, we will not do this and we will go on strike. I don't give a shit if I get fired, because you know what? I got news for you, everybody at Kutztown University and other universities, the 7 other, what, how many other universities in the state system that got retrenchment letters. People are going to lose their jobs anyways. This chancellor, as the chancellor before them, has it out. Republicans in office who people help elect want to remove it, want to fire faculty, want to get rid of our jobs. But licking the boots of Republicans and the president of the university is not going to keep your job. Hate to break it to you. The only way, I mean, The only thing that has ever gotten the goods has been direct action and collective action, period. I'm sorry. I've had such difficulty even engaging in some of the organizing that has happened over the summer because I recognize how close I am to blowing. Of how close I am to just like going after people. And it is unfair to those people. It is unfair, but I've got to the point where I've had it. And I just don't know what it's going to take. And so I started to write, I spent 45 minutes the other day writing a response to that letter to our faculty listserv, you know? And I was like, you know what? No. Is that if I'm going to talk about this, I'm going to talk about it in a public sphere, right? Not in a freaking faculty listserv that goes nowhere. Right, that goes to a bunch of people who really don't give a shit anyways, as long as they've keep their own cultural capital. So am I being unfair to people? Probably. Right, am I being not nice? Yeah. Right, are people going to be looking at me with that? Blah, blah, blah? Yeah. But you know what? I don't know what to say. I've watched other faculty members who have been doing amazing organizing work. And I've watched them again and again take the burden of organizing on their shoulders, do bang up work, and then have people who should be our representatives in our union, other faculty members, basically take that person and demonize them as being too aggressive, right? As being unreasonable, as not being nice enough. And I don't know, that is, in my mind, cruelty. Systemic, organized cruelty. And yet, we're the bad people. We're the ones who are causing discomfort. If we want to stand up for workers on our campus, if we want to stand up for food service workers and custodial workers and groundskeepers and our own jobs, niceness with the administration and bootlicking is not going to do it. We're going to have to organize and we're going to have to be a hell of a lot more militant than we have to do. Read your freaking history books, people. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to be right back after this with today's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I just took a couple real deep breaths and had a little more coffee.
Adam Sandler movie.
Oh, man. That's what happens when you keep something in for too long.
Just let it go.
Yep. Let it go. Let it go. So anyway, so I don't have a whole lot for today's last call. I did want to just kind of give a shout out some of the stuff at Free Will. Free Will's got some, I just got a message I got to respond to in a minute. Free Will just got, they did some kind of cool stuff. There's this great, what do you call it? It's a food truck that comes on. It's called Tray Locally Sourced. They do a lot of kind of locally sourcing of food, obviously from the name. And it'd be a standard food truck they'd be have at least once a week. They'd be one of the food trucks that would be at Free Will. There's been new kind of regulations that have been passed from, say, Governor Wolf this past week, is before that, is that if you wanted to actually kind of consume alcohol on premise, right, then you'd actually have to have a meal with that, right? So Free Will has been kind of been working out how to do this, because they did it, you know, they kind of rented or bought or something like this, this big field where they had these kind of outdoor kind of beer garden, socially distanced and stuff. They were doing a pretty bang up job with it. But with these new things, they've had to revise it. And once again, they got creative, and they've been working with this Tray Locally Sourced to actually provide food on a daily basis for a daily menu, so that if people still want to go there and want to have a beer, they'll actually have access to food and they'll be able to kind of stay open. It's a great example of being, say, creative and being committed to abiding by the regulations, as opposed to just whining about it. If you do want to go and check things out at Free Will, you can. I want to give a shout out to some of their cool stuff they got right here. They have a new release. I believe it's a new release. I've never seen this before. It's called Earthless. It is a corn lager with hemp hearts. Have you ever heard of that, something like that before?
I have not, no.
I have never heard of it. So I was going to give a read. This is kind of looks interesting. I'm really curious about it. It said they brewed this classic crisp American lager with a base of Pilsner malt, flake corn, and milled hemp hearts in the boil. Lagered cold for many weeks, this beer is meant for daily drinking and shared experience among friends, familiar in all the ways a sessionable light lager should be, with the added twist of delicate aromas and taste of hemp. Comes in at 4% ABV and ships in six packs, or you can kind of pick it up through there. You go to the freewillbrewing.store to pick that up. I'm intrigued, I got to say. I'm intrigued with that. Definitely kind of check that out. If you're looking for other recommendations for the Free Will's online store, there's two ones that I picked up. This is last week, so we didn't talk about this on the show. But there's it's a hazy IPA. It's called Or Just the End of Time. It's fantastic. It is, it comes in at 7.3 ABV. It's brewed with flaked oaks and hopped with Galaxy El Dorado and Hoyle Melon. But very, very good. Super fine drinking. It's good stuff. And one of the newest addition to their Rodlers, which is the Rodfeller, right? Basically, it's a Rodler, but it's a peach lemonade Rodfeller, which is also fantastic. That kind of comes in a nice light, kind of 3.9 ABV, very crisp, light, fruity, super drinking for, especially for those hot days at the end of summer. So definitely want to give a shout out to them folks. We'll have more beer recs when it comes next week. But I want to do that. The other thing that I have, just the other thing I want to add for kind of news this week is that, I've got a funky new computer, Sean. I think I sent you that video ahead of time with all sorts of, flashing lights and kind of, UFO looking stuff in it. So, but it is not fully set up, yet. I learned this when I bought my last computer, the one that is kind of needs to be repaired. Is that if you're going to do streaming, especially when you're talking about, I have to be all online, we have to be kind of like streaming my classes online and all this stuff, that I'm going to need something that can handle the video processing and stuff. So the best way to go is get a gaming computer. Even though I don't game, I in my head, I game, I wish I gamed, but I don't. But I wish I had the time for that, but I don't. But I got this to get the specs that I needed to be able to kind of making sure that everything was going to do well. I found this one company. It's called, what is it? Oh, I'm going to forget the name of it right now. I don't know, but it's this funky, crazy computer that's got like a glass door on one side. You can open it up and can see all the inside with all these flashing lights. It's kind of fun. But it's under my desk, so I don't really see the flashing lights anyways. But that's it. that was my big upgrade. And I'm, of course, this always happens at the time. It was like, I was just going to say, you know what? I'm just going to get my computer repaired. I was going to go away. I called a place I normally get computer work done, and they were just backed up. So I knew I wasn't going to have, I couldn't get the computer back in time in order to kind of actually run my classes from home. So I bit the bullet and bought a new computer. So that's fun. So that's all I got, Sean. So other than that, and having to finish off my planning for the semester, because the classes start on Monday. My first classes are on Tuesday. It's going to be a stressful weekend for me to kind of figure out how to make all of this work. But there you have it. What's going on for you?
Have fun.
Yeah. Well,
what's that?
What's going on for you? Got anything planned for the weekend or anything?
No, nothing too much. Probably just looking for more things on Amazon to get for my apartment. That's about it. It's all I'm reduced to now at this point. With
like what? You need like furniture and stuff, or like things like
stuff to hang on the wall. I'll get those Velcro things. Get some posters, nails. I still need to like get like that type of stuff. So.
I can see that from your two pictures that are still sitting there on the floor.
Still sitting there with the cord to my box fan. So
yeah, there you go. Excellent. I have to say though, that room that you're sitting in right now would be the light in that room is like my dream room to work in. So
It's a shame. Like I got some ideas for it. It's just gonna take a bit. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
But.
Cool, man.
Yep.
Well, hey, so hopefully that by next week, I'm going to have all the kind of technical kinks worked out. And then we'll be streaming once again. And hopefully when I pull up this recording, the sound levels are going to be okay. It's been a little bit of a rough start for today. But I'm happy to be back. And this is kind of one of the routines that I look forward to. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, that's it. I'm good.
All right, man. So off into the great blue yonder you go. All right. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. If you want to become a member, become a patron, go to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Don't forget to tune into our live show on Monday night, and we'll be talking about the return to campus. Again, we'll have a student representative from Healthy Campus Bill of Rights at Kutztown University. I'll talk a little bit about the plague doctor action that took place yesterday. And we're also going to have some, as I mentioned in the show, some student organizer from East Stroudsburg University Student Solidarity Committee, who are doing amazing solidarity campaigns with campus food service workers up there, and really has been a model for, in my mind, of how we can actually organize appropriately and for power. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all hopefully on Monday. If not, well, we'll see you next week. See ya!
If safety cannot be the sole driving force behind the decisions we in government are making, it cannot be the driving force behind what our governor is doing, what our Secretary of Health is doing. I've seen some calls from teachers unions and others saying, you know, we can't go send kids back to school until there are 2 weeks of zero cases. We've lost our collective minds if that's how we are going to choose to move forward in this society. We simply cannot continue going down this destructive path of trying to keep everyone safe, trying to keep everyone from getting any form of any sickness. What's next? We're going to quarantine children who get the stomach flu, quarantine someone who gets the common cold. When does this end? It is not the government's responsibility to keep people safe. It's not the government's responsibility to pass mandates, to pass orders, to try to keep us safe. It's time for us to take personal responsibilities for our families. Government cannot be expected, nor should they be expected, nor should they assume the role of trying to keep us all safe.